Hello and a very warm welcome to Centre Stage. Good to have you with us. Now, today is Christmas Day, the birthday of Jesus Christ, peace be upon him, and of course the new year 2014 is only a week away actually. The year 2013 has gone very fast, hasn't it? So let me, on behalf of everybody here at Centre Stage in Tehran, wish you, our dearest viewer, a Merry Christmas and a very Happy New Year 2014. Hopefully a year of happiness, success and prosperity. May God Almighty help you achieve success in every facet of your life and all your heartfelt wishes come true. Welcome back. Now, the year 2013 was an extraordinary year in which some extremely important and thought-provoking and in some cases unexpected developments took place. Now, we'll be discussing some of those developments in this first in a two-part series of programs called 2013 in Review. Well, two top guests join us today to discuss these developments. Now, in our Tehran studio, I'm delighted to be joined by top political analyst Dr. Fadi Zadi. It's a great pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you for having me.
And we wish you a Merry Christmas, of course.
Thank you.
Now, Dr. Fadi Zadi is actually, as I said, a well-established political analyst and thinker, particularly on issues affecting the Middle East and the world of Islam, as well as the US. Now, via Skype from a state in the southeast of the US, we're pleased to be joined by a political scientist. Professor Nader Entisar, welcome to Centre Stage.
Thank you very much.
And we wish you a very Merry Christmas.
Thank you.
Now, let me just tell you that Professor Nader Entisar is Professor and Chairman at the Department of Political Science and Criminal Justice, University of South Alabama. Time for a short break, but after the break, we'll be discussing the first half of the most important developments in 2013.
The year 2013 was most certainly a quite tumultuous year, full of important and in some cases historic developments. Centre Stage, in a two-part series of programs, including this week's program, tries to investigate the most significant and at the same time thought-provoking global developments affecting the world in general and the world of Islam in particular. We start with Bahrain, where in January 2013, Bahrain's highest court upheld jail terms for 20 opposition figures, including 8 sentenced to life, for alleged plots to overthrow the monarchy. This decision led to more protests and brought renewed international criticism, even from the monarchy's closest Western allies. And as we speak, the protests continue. Violence against Muslims, both Shia and Sunni, in both Pakistan and Myanmar was another unfortunate development, which lingered on in 2013. On January 10th, a twin bomb attack in Quetta, which is the capital of Balochistan province, killed more than 90 people, mostly Shia Muslims. On February 16th, a bomb attack targeting Shia Muslims in the main bazaar of the southwestern city of Quetta killed at least 90 people, including women and children, and injured more than 200 others, and the list of attacks continued. Myanmar also continued to be the scene of crime against Muslims in 2013. The Muslim minority of Rohingyas in Myanmar, who accounts for about 5% of the country's population of nearly 60 million, has been facing torture, neglect, and repression since the country achieved independence in 1948, and the year 2013 was no exception. Another important development, and probably one of the most unexpected ones, took place in Egypt on July the 3rd, when the army toppled Egyptian President Mohamed Morsi, suspended the constitution, and dissolved the parliament. However, August 14th was a day when the most unexpected happened. The military-appointed government launched a brutal crackdown on thousands of peaceful pro-Morsi protesters in Cairo, leaving about a shocking 640 dead and hundreds of others injured. This was followed by Friday of Rage, when at least 173 people were killed and over 1,000 more injured. In another important development of the year, a quite unprecedented move in the Persian Gulf region, Qatari Sheikh Hamad bin Khalifa Al Thani officially abdicated power in favor of his 33-year-old son, Sheikh Tamim, on June 25th. Whether he will be any different from his father will probably be evident in 2014 and beyond.
Hello again, it's great to have you back with us. Now, let's just start off with Bahrain and an important development there. We'll go back about a year, Central Stage 50, and of course I have to tell you that this Central Stage is Central Stage 98. So Central Stage 50 was one of the shows allocated to Bahrain. We actually allocated a number of our shows to Bahrain and covering that, because one of the reasons was that we thought that not enough attention has been given to Bahrain. So at that time, we talked about Bahrain's highest court upholding jail terms for 20 opposition figures, including 8 sentenced to life for alleged plots to overthrow the monarchy. And now, in spite of the fact that this decision would most probably touch off more protests and bring renewed international criticism, even from the monarchy's closest Western allies, Bahraini authorities decided to go ahead with that decision. And that actually shattered hopes that the government, through the courts, would have softened its stance to encourage meaningful dialogue with the opposition. And Professor Entisar, we know that as we speak, the protests still continue in different forms, and we learned on Monday, just a couple of days ago, that Bahrain opposition was likely to boycott 2014 parliamentary and municipal elections.
There is no question that the crisis in Bahrain is endemic, has deep roots, and we will be in a long period beyond 2014, actually, where this crisis will continue. How it will end, of course, is anybody's guess. But Bahrain is a flashpoint in the Persian Gulf. There's no question that is the most significant crisis in the region.
Thank you very much indeed. Now, Dr. Izzedi, we know that actually, if you look at the developments in the Middle East and also the countries affected by the wave of Islamic awakening, Arab Spring, whatever you call it, we see that Bahrain actually hasn't been paid the attention it deserves. So I've put that question to a number of the guests. There are some analysts who say that probably the scale of the developments there and the number of casualties is not that much. So that was the reason. They mentioned this as a reason for Bahrain's not actually receiving enough attention. So what's your thoughts on that?
Well, the number of casualties was not a few. You had hundreds of people in jail, tortured. You have many people killed. You had a situation where a suppression was used in extensive forms for many, many months continuously. The real reason why no one paid attention, or very few people paid attention to the crisis in Bahrain, was the fact that both the US government and the British government were not only supporting the Bahraini dictatorship politically, they were actually supplying arms and anti-riot equipment to the Bahraini government to suppress the uprising of the people. So if you want to find out how much human rights is valued in the United States foreign policy elite within them, or the British foreign policy elite, you can look at the case of Bahrain, and you will see that the suppression was actually organized and orchestrated by individuals that were sent there, British and American individuals that were sent there to suppress this popular uprising. And if you talk to any Bahraini citizen, they will tell you how much suppression they faced and the hardship that the people of Bahrain went through. So I think it would be injustice to reason to just ignore the fact that Bahrain is different, not because it was less violent than other cases. Bahrain is different because the government there is supported by a number of Western governments.
And probably, if we look at that in proportion, the number of casualties is also not as few as it seems at first glance.
But the population is much less than many other countries. Egypt has about 80 million, and about 800 people were killed when Mubarak was being overthrown. Mm-hmm. And you saw international media covering that on a daily basis extensively. Bahrain's population is much less, and as you said, when you compare the number of casualties to that number of people, it should have received more attention than many other places that got attention.
But you know, to be honest with you, we've seen the probably other you know, revolutions or uprisings in the world of Islam being more successful than Bahrain. We had, for example, the case in Egypt, in Libya, in Tunisia. They actually came to somewhere, but in Bahrain, there's still the opposition is fighting, and still probably they don't see something evident, no evident result.
You know, Bahrain was the only country that was invaded by a foreign government. The Saudis invaded Bahrain. If Saudis did not invade Bahrain, if people were facing their own government, Bahrain would have been a successful revolution as well. In case of Egypt, in case of Libya, in case of Yemen, in other cases, Tunisia, you did not have a situation where a neighboring country actually sent tanks and armored vehicles to that country. So that's another way that Bahrain is different. And in fact, that invasion also did not get attention. Imagine if the Iranian government was going to send troops to Iraq to stop the terrorist activities there, sending tanks, Iranian government sending tanks to Iraq.
But
you can imagine what type of media attention that would
Saudi get. Saudi Arabian officials are saying that Bahrain is a part of Persian Gulf Cooperation Council, so that's the reason. It's not invasion, actually, they're helping them because it's a part of our organization.
Helping who? Helping the people of Bahrain? They're killing the people of Bahrain. The Saudi occupation forces actually tortured and killed a lot of people there. They're helping the ruling monarchy, and the ruling monarchy is illegitimate because they are killing their own people.
Okay.
And that needs to stop. Obviously, having programs on the issue of Bahrain is important,
right.
Especially when other media outlets are not covering it. But more needs to be done.
Great. Thank you very much indeed, Dr. Izzedi, for that. Now, let's talk about, Professor Entsah, some unfortunate and violent events in 2013. We know that a large number of Shiite Muslims were killed in Pakistan in 2012. Actually, the number is estimated to be 400, which was, of course, the deadliest year on record for the Pakistani Shiite Muslim community. Unfortunately, the year 2013 didn't fare any better for Shiite Muslims in Pakistan.
Yes, actually, the killing of Shiite Muslims at a high rate began many, many years ago under the presidency of Zia-ul-Haq and has continued unabated till the present time. Pakistan is a very sectarian country, and in recent years, of course, it has become even more polarized and sectarian, and that's why we see this harsh reaction against Shia population. And the government in Pakistan is either incapable or finds it convenient to ignore the onslaught on the Shiites. It's a major problem that Pakistan has been facing for many, many, many years now, basically. Yes, it is. And of course, in Iraq, obviously, you know, the various extremist groups that have targeted Shia population to the very day that we're talking about, you know, that's another major issue confronting the Shia population. In Iraq, of course, the government is a Shia government and the majority of the population are Shiites, but in Pakistan, it's a different story.
You know, the thing is that Lashkar Ganjvi is being blamed for lots of these atrocities against Shia Muslims. It seems that nobody's actually, they're probably willing or able to do anything against them. They're still doing, we've had a number of cases where the circumstances were quite similar. So it shows that those behind those attacks belong actually to the same group or organization. But as I said, nobody's stopping them.
Well, one of the reasons, not the only reason, but one of the reasons for this is that there are a significant number of people in inter-service intelligence, ISI, in Pakistan that support these extremist groups. And as long as they have that type of infrastructural support within the Pakistani government, it's going to be difficult, if not impossible, for the Pakistani government, even if it decides to do something about anti-Shia violence, to take effective measure against it.
Thank you very much indeed. Now, over the course of the last year, several of our shows were dedicated to discussing Egypt. For example, Central Stage 80 was called Egypt After Massacre. So let me read out to you the introduction of the show, which was broadcast in August. It actually says that Egypt has plunged into an unrelenting string of violence since General Abdel Fattah al-Sisi, the head of the Egyptian armed forces, announced on July the 3rd that Morsi was no longer actually in office. The country is currently locked down under a month-long curfew, and the police have been authorized to use live ammunition in case of attacks against the state buildings. So this, among other things, led to the August 14th massacre, leaving about a shocking 640 dead. Then we had Friday of Rage, when about 180 people were killed. And of course, we had the prison incident, where almost 40 lives were lost. So to sum up, since last week, and actually that's a part of the introduction, 1,000 people have been killed. So that was 4 months ago, Dr. Izzadi, and that was a part of the introduction of Central Stage 80. But the problems in Egypt still seem quite far from being resolved.
Yes, what happened in July was a coup d'etat against a government that was voted in. It came through a democratically orchestrated process. And the coup d'etat was organized by the military with the support of governments like Saudi Arabia and Israel, and of course the United States. Initially, the US was hesitant in terms of supporting the coup, but it took just a few weeks for Secretary Kerry to accuse the Morsi government of hijacking the revolution, which is totally wrong. And the result is that the people's will, which resulted in the overthrow of the Mubarak regime, now is in a situation where the same people who worked for Mubarak, the same structure is back in power. The people who orchestrated the revolution, a lot of them are in jail. And we have a pure dictatorship that is ruling Egypt with no objection from countries that claim to support human rights.
And today, Muslim Brotherhood was designated as a terrorist group by the government. That's the latest.
And you look at the history of Muslim Brotherhood for the last 80 years, and this type of bombing, the excuse was the bombing that happened with 14, 15 people getting killed.
Yes.
In the history of Muslim Brotherhood, you don't see anything like that. You don't see these types of bombings. Who did it? There was an organization that claimed responsibility, which was not Muslim Brotherhood. But in reality, you see how the revolution was actually hijacked by people who were trained. by the United States. Assisi received his military training in the United States, in Washington, on K Street. There's a huge building that hosts about 500 Egyptian officers annually. They come in, they're on first name basis with their American counterparts, and they get trained in terms of how to suppress populations.
So they called him Abdul Fattah, right?
Or Abdul, probably. And the result is that the same people go back to their countries, and it's not just Egypt. In other parts of the Arab world, in fact, in Latin America, you have this same situation. In Latin American case, you have a School of Americas in Georgia that trains these brutal generals, and their job is to make sure that the system that the United States wants to run in these countries is safe and secure.
But I think it's fair to say that Morsi did make some mistakes, didn't he?
Well, who doesn't? All politicians make mistakes. That doesn't give an excuse to anyone to overthrow a democratically elected government. Mossadegh also made mistakes in Iran. Other politicians make mistakes. Our current government makes mistakes. It doesn't give anyone an excuse to overthrow a government that was democratically elected. That's why you have a democratic process. If a government makes mistakes, you have to wait for the next election and then run against them and try to unseat them through the democratic process, not by jailing them, not by killing. You know, since the coup d'etat in Egypt, you had thousands of people being shot on the streets in Cairo and other cities by the coup leaders, and that's very bad.
Thank you very much indeed for that. Actually, we're going to talk about another important development, and that development actually was in the Persian Gulf region. And we know that in a quite unprecedented move in the Persian Gulf region, Qatari Sheikh Hamad bin Khalifa Al Thani officially abdicated power in favor of his 33-year-old son, Sheikh Tamim, on June 25th. And is it very interesting that in his address, Sheikh Hamad referred to the words of Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him. He said, quote, and that's actually what Imam Ali said, teach your children other than what you were taught, as they are created for a time other than yours. He also said it was time for a young leadership to take over the responsibilities. But Professor Intisar, at 61, I think it's fair to say that Sheikh Hamad's not such an old blood himself, is he?
No, he was not. He's not, I should say. Actually, what has happened in Qatar is a sort of a peaceful transfer of power. And in terms of policy, there is not going to be any major policy shifts. The son, the current leader of Qatar, and the previous leaders pretty much follow the same lines. And I think it's more for the public relations face of Qatar, that the previous ruler wanted to give the impression to the rest of the world. As you know, Qatar actually pretends to be a much more significant country than it is. Its size does not justify its global ambitions. Most of the recent crises we've had, somehow Qatar was involved either through financial aid and transfer of weapons to various levers in Libya, in Syria to some extent, and so forth. And I think what Qatar is more interested in is a public relations PR campaign, and wants to give the impression to the rest of the world, in the Western world particularly, that it is a forward-looking, modern, youth-oriented state, and for that reason, I think the change of leadership from a relatively young emir to his son should be analyzed in terms of public relations and the messages that the country wanted to send to the West.
Right, but probably, Professor Intisar, in terms of population and the size of the country, Qatar is not a very important country, but when we look at the improvements that has been made in that country over the course of the last 10 years, you see that Qatar has assumed a high profile on the international system. I mean, probably we can look at the, for example, Al Jazeera channel, look at Qatar Airlines, a number of other developments, the extraction of gas and the huge amount of investment there. So what I'm trying to say is that probably Qatar wants to assume an even higher profile on the international system.
Yes, I mean, that is certainly, if you look at the country's foreign policy in the past few years, it's very clear that is the intention of Qatar to make itself the center of commerce, not just in the Persian Gulf, but also in the entire region, Middle East and North Africa region. And it has invested heavily in all areas of its economy, including heavy investment in education. If you look at Qatar today, practically.
Right. I think we have some problems having Professor Entisar with us. So if you agree, we'll now have our center stage online search after a break, and then hopefully we can have Professor Entisar after this break. So please do stay with center stage. Hello again and welcome back. Now it's time for today's Central Stage online search, where we go on the internet for you to pick for you what's taken center. And that's what we normally do, but because today's program is dedicated to the year 2013 in review, so the web pages we've chosen are some of the web pages that took center stage over the course of the last year. So we're going to have a look at four websites, Dr. Izzadi. The first one is about Bahrain. So Bahrain opposition likely to boycott 2014 poll. This one is actually a new one, because the most recent development in Bahrain. So the process is still continued. They haven't succeeded probably, but they, in one form or another, they're continuing the protests.
Right, and they're opposing sham elections, elections that are run by dictators, and the people who are going to be there are already chosen by the dictator. Should not be, people should not participate in that. Participating in such right. elections is giving legitimacy to oppressive powers.
Okay, great. Let's go to our other website. This is actually the picture of this man is the monk who some refer us to. Actually, his name is Viratu, and he's the monk who is preaching hatred against Muslims. Some people even call him a mad monk. And we know that over the course of the last year, lots of atrocities have been committed against Muslims in Myanmar, and they even call it the Palestine of Asia.
Yes. What is interesting about Myanmar is that, first of all, you have that very pro-Western leader, Ms. Suu Kyi, that is quite very quiet with regard to the killing of that portion of her country's population.
I think she broke her silence at last, but probably was not as, you know.
And what she did was, as you said, too little, too late. Mm. And she has gotten all the human rights awards of Western countries. So that's hypocrisy there. Mm. And then the hypocrisy of these Western powers, that if someone in another part of the world faces the smallest degree of difficulty, they will oppose. But you have tens of people, hundreds of people getting killed in Myanmar, and there's a total silence by the Myanmar government that is more or less helping this thing to happen. And from this human rights lady, that shows her level of hypocrisy.
Okay, thank you very much indeed. Let's go to our next web page. This is actually an unfortunate event in Egypt that we just, Dr. Zeta talked about. This is the Muslim Brotherhood's official English website, and these unfortunate pictures were seen, unfortunately, several times over the course of the last year in Egypt.
Yes, the human suffering needs to stop, I think. We had difficulty with because of the mistakes that the Morsi government had. Some people in some parts of the world at least thought that maybe this is not such a bad idea.
Right.
But in reality, you see the ordinary citizens in Egypt are going to suffer because they're going to be under another type of Mubarak government, and they're going to suffer because if they oppose that government, they're going to be killed.
Right, thank you very much. And let's go to our last web page for today. And this show is actually the Qatari new ruler, you know, Sheikh Tamim, actually, looks very happy, I think, in this image.
Well, you know, his father actually orchestrated the coup against the new Amir's grandfather. So this is what happened with Qatar last time. The son orchestrating a coup against the father. I guess he's happy because he didn't have to go through that coup process again.
And, you know, I think this normally, because, you know, when you look at the Persian Gulf region, normally you have the rulers almost dying when the new, you know, ruler comes, but Qatar was an exception, wasn't it?
Yes, because the ruler that abdicated to his son was someone who actually got the power from his father to the coup d'etat. So I guess he didn't want the same thing happen to him.
Okay, thank you very much indeed for that. Now, I've been told that now we have Professor Intisar with us. So, Professor, you were just talking about the situation in Qatar, and we then lost you. So if you agree, we could just we'd very much like to listen to the rest of your comments.
Yes, I was going to say that, you know, it's as Dr. Izadi just mentioned, you know, that essentially, you know, this has been a pattern in Qatar. You know, you've had the father of the current leader who had staged the coup d'etat against his own father, and then this time, you know, we had a soft transfer of power. And what I was saying is that in Qatar, you know, the general trend in Qatari politics in recent years has been to project a picture of a progressive, forward-looking country in the Middle East, ready for business and willing to participate in all kinds of international activity, be it educational expansion, involvement in foreign crises, aiding the West in transfer of money and weapons to various groups and causes that maybe challenging certain governments. So Qatar is, to use a sport metaphor, is punching well above its own weight. The danger in this kind of political game is that you may overstep your capability one of these days, and you may get knocked out if you do that. So there's, you know, the Qataris are, you know, playing it cautiously, but nonetheless there is a danger involved in trying to overreach your limits.
And you know, we've already seen 6 months of Sheikh Tamim. So do you think that Qatar under Tamim will be any different from Qatar under Hamad?
No, I don't think so. In terms of general policy orientation, we will not see any difference. Again, as I mentioned, we may see some cosmetic domestic changes, but in general, the structure of the country will remain the same. Its foreign policy orientation will remain the same as before. No, we won't see any changes.
Okay, thank you very much indeed. Now, there is one important question that I'd like to put to our both guests. So, first off, Dr. Izadi, we've had lots of developments, some of them quite unexpected in 2013. So, if you wanted to just pick out one of those developments which you thought would be quite outstanding and the most important development of 2013, what would that be?
Well, I guess it would be the elections in Iran. We had a new president, President Rouhani. A lot of people outside Iran, especially outlets that are linked with the U.S. government, the British government, actually wanted the Iranian people to boycott the elections. There was a lot of talk about the fact that people should not participate in these elections. And we had a huge participation rate. And we had Dr. Rouhani, who was not doing that well in public opinion polls earlier in the election process, actually managed to win in the first round of elections. So I think that will have significant results, that election will have significant results for Iran, and it will have significant implications for the outside world with the new foreign policy outlook that the current government has. I think the election of Dr. Rouhani is quite significant.
Right, and of course we're going to discuss this in our second part of the shows on the developments in 2013. So let me also put the same question to you, Professor Antasar. From your perspective as an established political analyst, what's been the most important and thought-provoking development in the year 2013?
Well, obviously, you know, I don't want to repeat what Dr. Izzadi said, the developments in Iran and what we've seen since the election of President Rouhani. It has to be, you know, regarded as, if not the most significant, but certainly one of the most significant developments. But let me just add another development, the most current development, unexpected development in the region, and that is the evolving financial crisis that is engulfing the Turkish government. I think that also, depending on how it develops the next few weeks or a couple of months, it could have a significant impact on both our Iran's neighbor Turkey, as well as the region as a whole. So I would say that, you know, as we approach the end of 2013, we should keep our eyes open to what is happening in Turkey.
Thank you very much indeed. So that, well, may be another important development in 2013. So unfortunately, that's all the time we've got for the moment. But before I go, I'd like to thank again my top guests. We had Professor Nader Antasar, political scientist, and Dr. Fadi Izzadi, established political analyst and thinker in our Tehran studio. Thanks very much indeed for coming on, for talking to us, and of course for those insights. Until next week from me, our guest today, and the rest of the team, it's goodbye for now. Thanks very much indeed for watching. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
It's great to have you.